Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes. Those are some of the princes, I guess. The Indiana National Guard, Oklahoma National Guard, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia have announced a new partnership under the Department of Defense National Guard Bureau's State Partnership Program. The program pairs U.S. states and foreign nations to enhance mutual relationships, promote defense and security cooperation. Quote, we're proud, honored, and excited to join forces with Oklahoma and Saudi Arabia as we forge this new partnership and the opportunity to work alongside our neighbors, said the Adjutant General for the Indiana National Guard. Hoosier Guardsmen are dedicated, he says. Look forward to strengthening our relationships with our Saudi Arabian partners. The National Guard's experience in humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, and domestic and overseas operations will support U.S. diplomatic and security efforts to achieve shared goals. That's exciting. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Public Investment Fund, the PIF, has facilitated and benefited from human rights abuses. That's according to a Human Rights Watch report this week. The report found that Saudi Arabia's vast fossil fuel-derived state wealth is effectively controlled by one person, Mohammed bin Salman. Yes, Salman is running. The Human Rights Watch found that the Crown Prince wields enormous economic power in a largely arbitrary and highly personalized manner rather than for the Saudi people's benefit, and that the PIF is used to whitewash the Saudi government's abuses. In other words, piffle from piff. And, as if that's not enough, and it's never enough, the Saudis have their own film event now, the Red Sea Film Festival. Last year, the president of the jury was Oliver Stone. They doubled down this year. The president of the jury is Spike Lee. It's reported in Puck that Saudis paid the filmmaker close to $3 million to accept the position. I guess Spike Lee said he's got to have it. Hello, welcome to the show. from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now,
artificial intelligence has got it all going on. AI, it's the way to be. Smarter, faster, never takes a break. AI, give your life a shake. From your phone to your home, it's everywhere. Making life easy beyond compare. Artificial intelligence, oh so bright. Making tomorrow's world out of sight. AI, it's the future today.
Those using personal computers with built-in AI services are less productive than those using traditional PCs. That's according to a study conducted by Intel, reported by the Register, the British Tech Journal. Intel, quite keen to see people buy the AI PCs sold by its hardware partners, but they came to this conclusion following a survey of 6,000 people in Germany, France, and the United Kingdom. Survey found people lose, on average, 15 hours a week on what Intel called digital chores. Wash those digital dishes, won't you, and do that digital laundry? Some of these tasks, set of activities that conveniently falls within the alleged ambit of chatbots, such as writing emails, transcribing meetings, managing files, etc., can be delegated to generative AI, thereby saving perhaps 4 of those 15 squanders per week, according to Intel. But it cites a website that references an unspecified Anthropic study as the source of the 4 hour per week savings figure for AI. There is academic research that supports claims about AI assistance and productivity for certain tasks. Quantitative details aside, though, achieving the purported time savings looks like it'll take further work. The study, quote, highlighted that current AI PC owners spend longer on tasks than their counterparts using traditional PCs. Continuing, many AI users spend a long time identifying how best to communicate with AI tools to get the desired answers or response. You know, not getting please die now. Organizations providing AI assistant products must offer greater education in order to truly showcase the potential of everyday AI. Unquote Intel. The Register asked them to quantify the task time toll incurred by an inexperienced AI user compared to work done on a traditional computer. Didn't hear back. The Intel Vice President, General Manager of Client AI, says the challenge for AI PC makers is re-educating knowledge workers so that AI tech becomes a help rather than a hindrance. From the Atlantic comes this. One screenwriter recently told Alex Reisner, who's reporting this piece, or writing this piece, he's seen generative AI reproduce close imitations of The Godfather and the TV series from the 1980s, ALF. He had no way to prove that a program had been trained on such material, but now, says Reisner in The Atlantic, he says with absolute confidence, many AI systems have been trained on TV and film writers' work on more than 53,000 other movies and 85,000 other TV shows. Dialogue from all of it is included in an AI training data set used by Apple, Anthropic, Meta, NVIDIA, Salesforce, and other companies. Reisner recently downloaded that data set. Includes writing from every film nominated for Best Picture from 1952 through 2016, at least 616 episodes of The Simpsons. Thank you very much. 170 episodes of Seinfeld, 45 episodes of Twin Peaks. That'll make for good AR. and every episode of The Wire, The Sopranos, and Breaking Bad. It even includes pre-written live dialogue from Golden Globes and Academy Awards broadcasts. That's got to bore the machine, don't you think? The files within the data set are not scripts, per se. They are subtitles taken from a website called opensubtitles.org. Users of the site typically extract subtitles from DVDs, ask your dad, and internet streams using optical character recognition software, your OCR. Then they upload the results to opensubtitles.org, which now hosts more than 9 million subtitle files in a lot of languages, more than 100. Though this may seem like a strange source for AI training data, subtitles are valuable because they're a raw form of written dialogue. They contain the rhythms and styles of spoken conversation. At least what writers think spoken conversation sounds like. And it allows tech companies to expand generative AI's repertoire beyond academic texts, journalism, and novels. Well, there's spoken language in novels. Well-written speech, Reisner says, is a rare commodity in the world of AI training data. Maybe especially valuable for training chatbots to speak naturally. Asking them to act naturally, of course, you'd have to call the Beatles. The subtitles have been used by Anthropic to train Claude, which wrote the AI jingle you hear on this program, by Meta to train a family of LLMs, large language models, called Open Pre-trained Transformer, by Apple to train family of LLMs that can run on iPhones, and of various other AI developers to build at least 140 models, open source models, distributed on the AI development hub called Hugging Face. Many of these models could potentially be used to compete with human writers. They're built without permission from those writers. When were writers ever asked for permission for anything? Well, Anthropic didn't provide a comment on the record. Apple similarly said its small LLM was intended only for research. But both Salesforce and Apple and other developers have made their models available for developers to use in any number of different contexts. All of the other companies mentioned in that report, well, they had other things to do than comment. Maybe they could teach their AIs to comment. Maybe not. Also, a recent social media post from a author and writer, Daniel Kibblesmith, revealed he was approached by publisher HarperCollins about using his kid's book, Santa's Husband, in a deal the publisher is making to provide portions of their library to a large tech company for the purposes of training an AI language learning model. Unlike the movie and TV writers mentioned earlier, Kibblesmith was offered a non-negotiable $2,500 to allow his book to be bundled in with other works for training over a 3-year period of use. The email he got mentions that several hundred authors have already agreed to the deal. Hey, that $25K, you know, pays for a lot of staples. He emphasizes that getting paid to have your work fed into AI is better than having it stolen for the same purpose. See, there's good in everything. Kibblesmith didn't quite agree. He called the deal, which he rejected, quote, abominable, unquote. As if it was written by a snowman or something. And the explosion of data center development across the United States to serve AI is threatening decades of progress cutting greenhouse gas emissions. According to the Washington Post, Utilities are laying plans for scores of new gas power plants to meet soaring electricity demand from the AI world. There's one being mooted to be built in northern Louisiana. We'll get their emissions just down our river. The fast-rising emissions from electricity use have emerged as one of the most vexing and unexpected challenges for world leaders who were negotiating agreements for containing climate change, global warming, at the UN climate conference this month in Baku, Azerbaijan. Even as wind and solar projects are rapidly coming online around the world, experts say energy demand from data centers needed for AI is growing much faster. Data centers alone will drive new natural gas consumption equivalent to roughly 10 to 30% of current U.S. demand for gas-fired power generation, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. Gas could therefore remain the dominant fuel for U.S. power generation for years, says Neil Chatterjee. He was chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission during the first Trump term. This is adding tremendous strain to the system at a time we're attempting to decarbonize. There are real moral questions that will be brought to bear. Is the benefit society is deriving from AI worth the energy intensity needed to power it? And with it, the carbon emissions. That's a question from a guy who worked for Trump. It's the future, if we want it. Now news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Hey, there was a recently arrived at agreement between the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia, AUKUS, AUKUS. It's a $239 billion pact promising thousands of jobs to South Australia, maybe even the return of submarine construction down under. Seems to make sense. Residents, though, of the area, South Australia, namely Adelaide, they've just learned that the deal means nuclear waste is going to be stored on their doorstep. It's madness, says an Adelaide resident. It's close to a residential area. It's right on a waterway, she said. The legislation quietly passed the federal parliament last month. It'll allow the storage and disposal of nuclear waste at the shipyard in Adelaide, northwest of the city's central business district, near a popular seaside suburb. Residents said it was the first time they heard about it. There's 30,000 people that live in this area, said the local resident. All the childcare centers, all the schools and the families that live in this area, also waterways that feed the mangroves, that is a dolphin sanctuary, and so forth. None of us in this area have been consulted about it at all. Unquote. The federal health minister says residents are going to be consulted closer to when the facility is going to be built. But he said the waste facility would go ahead even if residents didn't want it. This, he says, is going to happen. The government and the parliament have decided the future defense strategy of their country will involve nuclear-propelled submarines. They're going to be building the submarines. They got to have a place to put the waste. Oh, by the way, the shipyard, where all this is going to be taking place, is on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people, said an indigenous elder. Quote, it's sly and conniving. That's how I feel about it, unquote. See, that's what happens when you ask the indigenous. It's going to take 6 months to a year to analyze a tiny sample of radioactive debris retrieved by a robot from Fuk Number 1 over in Japan, according to its operator this week, reported by Agence France-Presse. The analysis could shed light on radioactivity levels and the chemical structure of the fuel debris. That's a key part of preparation for the decommissioning process, which is expected to take decades. You got those on you? Around 880 tons of hazardous material remain at Fouk more than 13 years later. The sample, last week, it weighs just below 0.7 tenths of a gram. That's equivalent to about one raisin. It was delivered to a research lab near Tokyo. Why didn't they just take a raisin? It had been removed from a reactor by an extendable robotic device in a tricky operation, suspended several times by technical problems. And Dateline Richland in Washington, the Department of Energy in Washington State have reached an agreement on steps to address radioactive waste. There's that waste again, suspected this time of leaking into the ground from a storage tank at the Hanford nuclear site in the eastern part of the state. It's similar to the agreement on the first two huge underground tanks known to be leaking at the reservation. In that, Department of Energy is not required to immediately empty the tank. It can go on leaking. Our friend the atom.
Right here at the mouth of this river, where we stand today, I swear I can hear everything that I have long been wanting to say. So take your deepest breath and ask, will we last and why? Truth is, the answer runs right through our town and the rest of our lives. Here on this river,
New Orleans, this is the show. I guess we all know Matt Gaetz will not be our new Attorney General. Maybe Pam Bondi will. President-to-be Trump has been active all this week in naming new potential members to his cabinet and to his administration. And the Washington Post reports that things aren't all hunky-dory at Mar-a-Lago. Apparently, there are two or three groups, cohorts. I love the word cohorts now. It used to be we just had horts. Now we have cohorts of advisors kind of contesting, jostling for the attention of the man who craves attention. Some of them are already ticked off at Elon Musk. Hasn't he outstayed his welcome? They're asking, according to the Post. Me personally, I think it's just a matter of time. You can't have two narcissists in one place. That's a law of nature. Susie Wiles, who co-ran the Trump presidential campaign, is now his new chief of staff. She's, according to the Post and all these reports, a real pro. But she's already tangling with longtime Trump aide, I believe he's a lawyer, Boris Epstein. Shouting matches have occurred? Yeah. Just a little chaos. Sounds like an episode of The Mar Apprentice next on the show.
This week, for the first time, the cabinet picks are done before the turkey. And for the ex-president, president-elect, and future ex-president, the world is his boardroom.
Sir?
I love when you call me Sir, Susie.
Well, you always quote me saying that, so I thought I might as well do it.
You know, if you were any smarter, you'd be a man. What's up?
There's a call for you on the semi-important line.
Mm-hmm. Who is it?
Dr. Bill.
Okay.
Boris, if you're out there, I'm coming through. Don't push. Hello?
Mr. President-elect, congratulations from all of us in the mental health community.
Hey, Dr. Bill, it's a great community, one of my favorite communities, so thank you. And while you're at it or not, be sure to thank the community.
I don't see them all that often since I lost my license, but I know I speak for myself when I say that the next 4 years are going to be a time for all of us to come together.
Just shut up, Susie. Just shut up.
Hey, Dr. Bill, coming anyway is great, right? So, to what do I owe the possible pleasure of this call? I don't mean to rush you, but as you can imagine, I've got a lot of stuff, even just the stuff to ignore.
Well, sir, and I know you like to be called sir, and why wouldn't you? It's such a masculine appellation. But I couldn't help notice that you're making your appointments really fast.
Mm. Keeps the fake media off balance, right?
Yes, sir.
That's two sirs. Keep going. But, and you know this, I'm really not from Appalachian.
Of course. And you know, in your position, you have every right to choose whoever you want.
And I proved that with that scumbag Gaetz, right?
You sure did, sir. But you know we go way back before we both did TV, and I just had a slight decline in affect when I noticed your appointment to Director of Medicare Services.
Yeah, you're talking about
Dr. Schnoz.
You mean Dr. Oz?
I mean whoever. I mean, sir, I know this guy really well. We both came up through Oprah.
Yeah, she's a great talent. I wanted her for my cabinet, but we couldn't afford her. And I'll tell you something, her agent is one hell of a putz.
I have more experience in my little finger for a job like that than Oz has in his entire hand.
Yeah, but he's got two.
Fair enough. I just feel as though maybe in your very thorough, and deep evaluation of candidates for your cabinet. You just might have screwed up big time. And you know this, I'm a healer, so I think I could heal that for you.
Dr. Bill, I think I know what you're getting at, which is what? Cabinet's almost filled up.
Well, sir, I couldn't help noticing you haven't yet appointed a new Postmaster General. I mean, you know this. My skill set is all about bringing people together on TV, sure, but also long distance. Mm-hmm. And for sure, I'd make it my first order of business to speed up the printing of your stamp.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hoping for housing and urban development, since I do have all that experience with putting TV guests in the Dr. Bill house, but post office sure seems like a no-brainer.
Why would I want a no-brainer? I've got a great brain, one of the best. I'd take a brainer every day over.
Sorry, sir, I'm late for a taping. What do you think?
You know, I have a reputation for not paying my lawyer bills. I just don't think I'm going to pay a doctor bill either. No hard feelings?
Better than that, sir. No feelings at all. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for taking it.
New cabinet, new tasks, new furniture.
We're going to make the Oval Office great again.
The Mar Apprentice. Chaos is the new order.
Now, news of the godly. More about the abuser of boys in the Church of England, the late John Smythe. A minister in the Church of England has had his license to practice removed after being named in a scathing review into that prolific sexual abuser, the aforementioned Smythe. Reverend Nick Stott, he's a pastor in Cheltenham, had attended camps with Smythe and then organized or helped organize and fund them in Zimbabwe, according to the BBC. The review of this whole Smythe thing says Reverend Stott was advised not to join Smythe and his mission in Zimbabwe, but he still chose to go. No suggestion he committed any abuse. The Diocese of Gloucester has declined to comment on his behalf. The review outlined on Stott was told of an issue with Smythe way back in the 1980s, but he says that the details were not disclosed to him. Don't know what details he needed. He was also said to have witnessed surprising behavior at one of Smythe's camps, where abuse is now known to have taken place. Says he was first on the scene following the death of a 16-year-old boy who drowned while swimming naked at a camp run by Smythe in 1992. He said the review of this whole thing, he wishes he had done more once he was told of concerns about the disgraced barrister, Smythe. At the time he felt, quote, it was not his place to go investigating rumors, and in hindsight, he wishes he had done so, unquote. It's not that just the Brits. A Greek priest who founded a children's charity has avoided jail time despite being convicted of abusing minors under his care. Father Antonios Papanikolaou, founder of the Ark of the World, received a suspended 51-month prison sentence. He can pay it off at a rate of $10.50 per day. The verdict follows an eight-month trial in which Papanikolaou was convicted of charges including serious bodily harm and violence against minors. Four former employees of the charity were also handed suspended sentences, 17 to 40 months, meaning no one involved will serve jail time. The scandal has already led to the suspension of Greek state aid to the charity. Papanikolaou was previously found guilty of five misdemeanors in cases of sexual abuse and extreme punishment of minors. The court determined he acted as the, quote, moral instigator, unquote, of psychological and physical abuse, with punishments that included dangerous bodily harm and repeated minor bodily harm. It's the gamut of bodily harm. Sounds like a tourist attraction. News of the godly, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dayton in Fargo, North Dakota. Target is apologizing after they said an employee was wrongfully terminated over a dress code issue. Denise Kendrick, Target employee in Fargo, said she was fired over the weekend after she wrote "Trust in Jesus" on her name tag at work. She was approached by a manager who told her she can't wear that name tag. I replied, "Well, I've seen people with rainbows on theirs. I'm going to continue to wear this name tag." And then they said, "Well, you can't work here anymore." She asked for a written statement about why she was fired. The manager allegedly refused to provide it. Kendrick said she was confused because she'd worn Christian-themed shirts for months, never had an issue. Wondering why the name tag was any different, after reviewing the incident, Target apologized and offered her job back. Quote, "Upon learning of the situation, we conducted a review and determined that the team member should not have been terminated. We apologized to her and offered to reinstate her immediately. We're taking the appropriate steps to address the actions taken by the individual leader involved in this situation and are working with the store to ensure our policies are appropriately followed moving forward," unquote. Target. After defeating Mike Tyson Friday night a week ago, Jake Paul celebrated his win over the boxing legend in the middle of the AT&T Stadium ring. But his brother, Logan Paul, made a bit of a mess. Jake was enjoying his moment in the ring. Logan started spraying his brother with body spray and accidentally knocked Jake's hat off his head in an awkward and embarrassing moment. Logan took to Instagram beginning of this week, offered his brother an apology, explained he was using the moment to promote his brother's W Body Spray brand, and blamed his, quote, "poor motor skills," unquote, for what happened. Logan said he felt stupid and apologized for ruining his brother's big moment, and then said that Jake, quote, "smelled great," unquote. This might be a new member of the cabinet. Newly elected Indiana Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor is facing backlash after the Indianapolis Star reported three women accused him of sexual harassment between 2009 and 2016. The claim says the allegations were reported to past legislative leaders with no action ever taken. Taylor has released an apology saying in part, quote, "There have been times when I may have blurred the lines and behaved in a manner that potentially made my colleagues or those who witnessed my actions uncomfortable." He went on to say, quote, "While it was never my intent to cause harm, I acknowledge that, and for this I apologize." Is he apologizing for this or for that? Netflix's highly anticipated live stream of the Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight was plagued by severe technical difficulties, leading to widespread viewer frustration. Platform experienced frequent buffering, stream freezes, and audio issues. I thought that was part of the show. Even the broadcast's own commentators were forced to apologize for the constant interruptions. Netflix apologized after the backlash. Presenter Kate Abdo issued an apology after the series of technical glitches. Evander Holyfield's earpiece malfunctioned, leaving him unable to hear any of the questions Abdo asked, creating an awkward pause in the broadcast, prompting Abdo to ask Holyfield's former rival Lennox Lewis to step in and offer his thoughts. Realizing the technical difficulties were causing the disruption, Abdo quickly apologized. "Evander, I'm so sorry about the sound," and then thanked Lewis for his help. Lennox, thank you for stepping in and helping with the interview. We appreciate you. Unquote. Abdo. I knew an Abdo once. The Brazilian government of President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva this week issued an apology to the black population of the country for subjecting their ancestors to slavery, which still has consequences in modern-day society. In his message, Attorney General Jorge Macias underlined the need to combat racial discrimination. How many countries have now apologized for slavery? Have we? And, quote, the federal government publicly apologizes for the slavery of the black population and its effects. It recognizes that efforts must be made to combat racial discrimination and promote the emancipation of black Brazilians. Finally, it commits to strengthening the focus on the creation of public policies to this end. The same gathering, Human Rights Minister Macai Evaristo recalled the struggle of the black population for freedom and equality. It's like it's a thing. Now, Deadline Canada, Ottawa, the federal government is providing $32 million in U.S. dollars in compensation to the Inuit. Those are indigenous people in Nunavik, Canada, as part of Canada's apology for its role in the killing of sled dogs between the mid-1950s and the late 1960s. That's when sled dogs were good. The Indigenous Relations Minister, Gary Anandasangri, is traveling to apologize for Canada's role in the killings in northern Quebec. A report about 15 years ago from a retired judge found Quebec provincial police officers killed more than 1,000 dogs in Nunavik, quote, without any consideration for their importance to Inuit families, unquote. The judge found the federal government failed to intervene or condemn the actions, said the implementation of mandatory schooling and residential school was fundamental in the lead-up to the dog killings. Same thing that happened here and in Ireland, among other places. The schooling where indigenous... Oh, in Australia, where indigenous populations were kind of encouraged to drop their culture and their language and their thing. Quote, I'm hoping for some of them it will bring closure. The president of a group which represents the Inuit in Nunavik, continuing... When I hear some of the interviews of the elders that had their dog slaughtered, the pain they went through, it was so much. Their livelihood was taken away from them. They had no more means of going out on the land to go hunt, to fish, or get ice, or to go to the tree line. All the things they did with their dogs, that was taken away. Unquote. Oh, Canada. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now...
We torture some folks.
A federal jury has held a defense contractor legally responsible for contributing to the abuse of detainees at Abu Ghraib for the first time. The jury awarded a total of $42 million to three Iraqi men, a journalist, a middle school principal, and a fruit vendor. They were held at the notorious prison two decades ago. The wheels of justice grind exceedingly slow, don't they? The plaintiff's suit accused Virginia-based CICI, hired by the U.S. government to provide interrogation services at Abu Ghraib, of conspiring with American soldiers to torture detainees. The verdict, according to The Intercept, marks a rare victory for plaintiffs seeking to bring American corporations to justice for playing a role in the country's so-called war on terror. Ask your dad. Quote, what the jury did today is sound a very clear message that the contractors who go to war, go to work with the government overseas, they will be held accountable for their role in whatever violations their employees may commit. said the senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, which represented the plaintiffs. They need to have far better oversight over their employees to ensure that something like that, what happened to Abu Ghraib, never happens again, unquote the attorney. I'm going to go on a limb, ladies and gentlemen, based on experience of the last few decades, and say the least believable words, least believable two words in the English language are never again. The case was filed 16 years ago, got caught up in procedural hurdles. The company tried more than 20 times to dismiss the lawsuit. What do they have, Donald Trump for a lawyer? The case this month was a retrial. In an initial trial in April, jurors were deadlocked following more than a week of deliberations. The judge declared a mistrial. This trial also marked the first time that an American jury heard directly from Iraqis who were detained at Abu Ghraib. And what about Mitchell and Jessen, the two psychologists who taught the Americans, the soldiers, and maybe the company's employees, how to conduct enhanced interrogation? They were the great enhancers. They're walking free. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, a groundbreaking study conducted by the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, in cooperation with the state's Department of Natural Resources, has unveiled concerning levels of neonicotinoid insecticides in the state's ground and surface water sources. You know, where they get the water from. These findings could have significant implications for both public health and the environment, says the university. According to the research, neonics, a class of insecticides, as you know from listening to this program, they are widely used in agriculture and pest control, were detected at high concentrations in those sources and supplies. Chemicals are particularly hazardous to individuals who rely on shallow groundwater or natural springs for their drinking water, as those opposed to using deeper wells. Quote, oftentimes people think a natural spring has water that is safe to drink, unquote, one of the authors of the study. Continuing, that's not necessarily true. It depends on how deep that water is sourced, unquote. Published in the journal Science of the Total Environment, the study comes at a critical time, given the rising use of neonics in agricultural practices. Researchers collected water samples from 15 springs and 75 unique wells over a four-year period. That offered a comprehensive view of how these insecticides are spreading across various, you know, environments and stuff. Quote, we use so many of these insecticides in Minnesota. Basically, every corn and soybean seed is treated before planting. And many of these chemicals can be purchased at a local hardware store for spraying fruit trees, flea and tick control for your pets, and eliminating bed bugs, unquote the author of the study. That doesn't sound like Tim Walz's Minnesota, does it? The research provides a crucial foundation for identifying pollutants in unexpected sources, such as your natural springs, because they're often assumed to be pristine. Au contraire, mon frère. One of the surprising findings of this study, the pervasive contamination in natural springs and deeper wells. Quote, we were surprised by the high levels of the chemical detected in the natural springs, and in some cases the chemicals were observed at much deeper levels in wells than we expected, said the author, highlighting the extensive reach of these contaminants. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, over these same radio stations, on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Love to have you along. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. What are those? And the playlists of the music you hear here, as well as so many other things to enjoy, all at harryshearer.com. And now I'm on Blue Sky. And not speaking of enjoyment, still on Twitter at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easier radio network. So long. From the Crescent City.